And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to, hey, Gopher football is the number 20 team in the country. They're 6-0 with an 8-game winning streak for the first time in over 60 years. And this is your breakdown edition of an absolute dismemberment of a Nebraska football team that...
Oh, Ryan. Hold on. This is college football playoff bound Nebraska.
This is still college football playoff bound Nebraska. Now that 4-3, they're really going to need Alabama to tank. Auburn's going to have to lose some games here soon, and LSU is certainly going to have a very poor November. But there is a lot of good to talk about. For those of you that are new to the podcast, that are now out of curiosity trying to learn about this Gopher football team, welcome. We welcome you to Gopher Gridiron Radio. But before we get into that, Luke, you want to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Yeah, so if you guys haven't heard and you're new to the podcast, we have a sponsor and it's called the Goal Line Club. The Goal Line Club is a booster group that supports Gopher football and only Gopher football. And how do you support Gopher football? It's joining the Goal Line Club. You can do that at goalineclub.org. Also, you can join their tailgates and their other many events like their pregame preview at Jack's Cafe. You can do that on their website, goalineclub.org. If you want to save $5 to either the preview or the Goal Line Club tailgate, which, by the way, Ryan, I think we can both say is a pretty elite tailgate. It was absolutely jammed this week. A ton of fun. Met a number of great folks there. But if you want to save $5, Shelled 5 for the Maryland activities. Again, Shelled 5 will save you $5.
Yeah, it was popping there. It was, in my opinion, well over fire code in Williams Arena there.
The drink We wouldn't actually know.
It was packed in there with the weather that it was outside. It's inside. The drinks are awfully strong, and that is coming from a 6'4", 225-pound man. And trust me when
that
I
one,
say I'm...
That one bartender, though? Dude.
What a guy. He was a unique...
He's worth
individual.
The price of admission, I'm telling you right there.
It was. And then so you got the nice adult beverages. You have Tony's Diner from Dinky Town in there.
Insomnia Cookies.
Catering food, Insomnia Cookies. I mean, anything if you want to be nostalgic about your time in Dinky Town, especially if you were a graduate earlier this decade like I was, you can certainly take a trip down memory lane by going to that tailgate. But, Luke, before we get too far off track here, let's bring in the third member of this breakdown podcast, my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, I can already tell you we are going to have an awfully good time tonight talking about this Gopher offensive line, and we are going to wax poetically about the performance that they had. But how are things with you this evening?
Well, I'm doing really well, Ryan. Appreciate you having me back. And you're right. I certainly like talking about line play, and this is a game to. There's a lot to cover, a lot of good things. Different changes that were made, and seeing guys progress has been pretty rewarding. So excited to get into it and talk some college football.
I think it's only fair that we start with the black shirt defense that is the Nebraska Cornhuskers. They were very stout once again, giving up 450 yards and 34 points, an average of 6.6 yards per carry for that black shirt defense. I think that everybody will be proud of that defense. Oh, wait, we're not a Nebraska podcast. My bad. So
the shade.
So real quick, Nebraska fans, you're great. I actually like all of you quite a bit. The shade is mostly at the national media, which totally baited you guys into clicks, and I'm sorry. But let's go forward with the offense. I mean, that was amazing. Like just starting off, Derek, you already kind of led into the offensive line, and let's not short the tight ends as well. But the blocking that was incredible. So can you just give us a little deep dive into, you know, what was happening, what was working for this Gopher offensive line and tight end group this week?
Well, I think just quickly to summarize, I personally think it was the first half was probably the best half of blocking from a Gopher team in the PJ since PJ Fleck has been head coach. So
I would say that's a statement, but considering I guess, what would you put it against? Wisconsin last year, Georgia Tech last year, or even Illinois last week? Would those be the other three games that would come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, first thing that jumps to my mind would be Wisconsin last year, which was the schemes are a little different. They kind of got to the same place, took different routes. But that's probably the one that jumps to mind. You're right, Georgia Tech's a good one. I think just quickly, you know, versus the Illinois game, I think a lot of things were clicking. I thought the offensive line was just a lot more physical in the Nebraska game. I think that technique-wise, mentally, equally as good, but just more physical. So, you know, Nebraska was interesting, and with each of these games, it's interesting to see how these teams are going to try to defend the Gophers and what they're going to try to take away. And it was clear at the beginning of this game, Nebraska really was set out to try and stop the intermediate passing of the Gophers. So they used tight man coverage, press coverage on the outside. They kept two deep safeties in the middle of the field to try and jump any of those slant routes, anything in the middle of the field. But in doing that, a couple of things opened up for Minnesota. Obviously, bringing another safety out of the box means you're going to be running against an even box, so you're going to be able to have enough blockers, and that's always advantageous. And with the Gopher running game developing, it's, you know, they're able to, they're, frankly, Nebraska was not able to match up, you know, with even blockers. And then the other thing was, with that tight man coverage, press coverage on the outside, Minnesota was able to run off a lot of those defenders, you know, so the wide receivers, you know, they're running go routes and release routes on the outside on running plays, and that pulls those guys right out of the box. So what you're left with is six or seven blockers for six or seven guys in the box. And Minnesota in the first half went with heavy outside zone, and you know, it, like I said, Nebraska just wasn't able to match up. An exceptional job of blocking by all five Gopher offensive linemen.
Well, I think that's even the larger point is, why did Minnesota go to so much outside zone? Well, I think personnel and Nebraska's defensive front dictated that. And what I mean by that is, you look at what was Minnesota's offensive line for this game against Nebraska. They did not have their starting right tackle, Daniel Fa'alele, the 6'9", 375-pound man. He was out with a concussion. So what did that mean for how things kind of changed on the offensive line? So you took your left guard, Blaze Andrews, moved him to right tackle, of which I mentioned to Derek in the pre-production meeting, this is now the fourth position that Blaze Andrews has played in the last seven games. So remember back in Minnesota's bowl game, he was the left tackle and the right guard. Well, here in 2019, he's been the left guard, and for this game, he started at right tackle. The only position now that he hasn't gotten reps at is at center, of which, by the way, he was getting reps at center when Minnesota came out for warmups. That screams to me, if something were to have happened to Connor Olson and to John Michael Schmitz, he would have been the third center there. But that also brings me to Connor Olson moving from center to left guard. And then you put in John Michael Schmitz at center, of which, by the way, John Michael Schmitz had himself a day. But why did Kirk Shiraka go to so much outside zone? Well, you go from 375 pounds at right tackle to John Michael Schmitz at 6'2", 310 pounds. You're losing mass, and you're gaining mobility side to side and agility side to side. And then you're also going against the Nebraska front, of which Minnesota's offensive coordinator Kirk Shiraka talked about all week, how big and strong they were up front. Well, how do you combat that? You get them moving laterally. 330-pound defensive tackles don't want to move laterally. What is John Michael Schmitz going to do? Where is he going to win? He's going to win laterally. And so that's what Minnesota did. A bunch of outside zone, and there are just so many plays that stick out to me, Derek, about the holes that Shannon Brooks or Mo Ibrahim or Rodney Smith had to run through were just gigantic. And I have the gift rewinds up on Gopher Illustrated. I got the Upon Film Review, the free version, essentially, with plenty of gifts waxing poetically about this offensive line, of which, by the way, my only shameless plug for Gopher Illustrated tonight. Because of the 6-0 start, because of the increased interest in this Gopher football team, the 6-0 start ranked 20th in the country, a first 6-0 start in 16 years. We are doing a sale right now, 60% off an annual sub. That's $75 in savings. I think Luke would tell you on the basketball side of things, Ryan James has you covered, of which for Monday's potential big-time decision with Jamal Mashburn Jr. in Minnesota. Yes, that's Jamal Mashburn's kid, and he's quite a player, and he's going to potentially be deciding on Minnesota tomorrow. But if you've ever been on the fence, and now that there's the Wild are a disaster, the Twins get swept again, the Vikings continue to do Viking things and beat teams they're supposed to beat, if you're interested at all in Gopher Illustrated, this would be the time to jump in, 60% off for an annual sub. Or if you don't want to commit that much, it's still literally and figuratively 100 pennies for your first month. But just the way, Luke, that the offensive line and outside zone, and Derek talked about how he thought it was the best first half they'd been blocking. Well, the stats would probably tell you something pretty similar, considering Minnesota rushes for 220 yards in the first half on 9.5 yards per carry. Even I think my favorite play from that half, Luke, was Mo Ibrahim's touchdown run. I think it was Minnesota's second touchdown. Blaze Andrews and Jake Paulson opened a hole so large that a semi-truck could have driven through it. Ibrahim just had to turn the corner, and then he met a guy at the goal line and punished him. It was sensational. Even pass blocking, Derek, there wasn't really that much pressure. There was one pressure when he overthrew Bateman on the go route. But other than that, and you're talking about what I thought on tape anyway was a very physical Nebraska team, a team that had some ups and downs defensively, but just the way Minnesota's offensive line moved them and moved them very well consistently throughout the entire game, that this has to be, I mean, these are one of the podcasts that, you know, you just kind of think about it and be like, we've seen some rough, rough blocking days in the history of this podcast. And for this one to go the way that it did with a brand new right tackle and a center getting his first career start, I don't think it could have gone much better.
So let's actually take this, and I get that, you know, the offensive line was great, but we have to give some credit to the tight end group as well. Coe Keefe and Jake Paulson, they were really, really good blocking. I know Coe went down with an injury at some point. I don't know if he returned. Even Brevin Spann Ford. But, I mean, those guys deserve some credit. I know you gave them a little credit on the Mo Ibrahim touchdown, but I thought both of those guys were phenomenal as well.
Well, they're a part of the Minnesota Moving Company up front, trademark Paul Allen. I mean, Coe Keefe, I really hope he's okay. He went down, he absolutely de-cleated a Nebraska guy in a third quarter kickoff, and he went down and never returned. Sounds like it's a concussion. I really hope he's able to get out of the protocol here to play against Rutgers, and even still, they probably don't need him against Rutgers, and they need to get him ready for Maryland. Jake Paulson went down with a stinger, and then you also had Brevin Spann Ford get some reps along with Bryce Witham. But the way that this group is just playing collectively, it's tough to beat. I mean, you're talking about a team that just ran for 300 plus yards against Illinois. They ran for 300 plus yards, and against Purdue, you threw for 400, and you had a 100-yard rusher. I just think that it's with college sports. And Derek, I want to kind of kick it to you here to kind of close out the offensive line. But what folks don't understand, especially compared to pro sports, is when you're dealing with 18 to 22, 23-year-old individuals, they can improve very rapidly, and they can get much better from one season to the next, from one game to the next. I think if you're looking from one season to the next, Sam Schluter is a prime example of that. He's played well at left tackle. But I know that two guys I really want to highlight for you, Derek, are John Michael Schmitz and Curtis Dunlap, two guys I thought played really, really well. But why do you think that they played well?
Well, I think that what stuck out to me, John Michael Schmitz and his play at center on the outside zone was very, very good. I've been there. I've, as a played center, had to block outside zone. It creates a lot of, you know, you need, as you highlighted, you need that mobility, which snapping the ball puts you a half a count behind. And some of the reach blocks, you know, that you have to make on outside zone or getting off and getting down to block a linebacker are difficult coming from the center position. And he picked it up his mobility very good. He picked it up very quickly. And, you know, some of the blocks he was able to make reaching one technique and at times on a combo block, a three technique, were really exceptional. And then in cases where he's taking the linebacker and comboing up to the next level, he's been very good at that, you know, anytime he's been in this year. But again, particularly in this game, you know, getting to the next level in the linebacker and being physical and finishing physical was, I mean, the Gophers have had some good centers throughout the years. I mean, if you people listening have been Gopher fans for a number of years, they might remember Greg Esslinger, Ben Hamilton before him, all guys that played in the NFL and, you know, been able to see a lot of those zone running schemes and centers being able to pull and reach block. And it's not a given. You don't always have a center who's able to do that. So it's exciting to see what he was able to do on Saturday. And, you know, all this is to say it was a very, very good job from the center position with him. Curtis Dunlap is another one you mentioned, Ryan, talking about the progression. And this is why I love college football, because you get to see guys develop and go through, you know, what I was taught, and I typically think of it in a sequence of three different phases of a player, particularly an offensive lineman. You start with the mental phase, learning assignments, learning who to block. And the second phase is typically technique, learning how to block, how to get things done. And the third phase is that effort, finishing blocks, being physical. And in general, it's a sequence. If you're not able to focus fully on the second phase until you've mastered the first, and the third until you've mastered the first two. And so Curtis is a good example of a guy who, here's this really big, strong kid, but you might see, you know, early in his time that he's been playing, you know, maybe he doesn't look as physical as he could be, and you're wondering, why isn't this kid 340 pounds? Why isn't he just driving people all over the field? It's because he has to learn the mental aspect of it and the plays, learning how to block, who to block. And then the second part is the technique. Well, this is really, in my opinion, the first game he is fully moving into that third phase and being able to be physical and give the effort, that it's not a choice thing. It's not about being lazy or not giving effort. It's, again, you're not able to mentally, you know, focus on that aspect until you've got the first two. So it's fun and it's rewarding to see a guy like Curtis who's coming along, and now in this, you know, this game, it's clicking for him. So you mentioned it, Ryan, sometimes it takes a player two games to pick things up. Sometimes it takes a player a year and a half to get from one phase to the other. Everybody's different. So this one in particular for Curtis, really exciting to see how physical he was able to be, because he has the tools. You know, one particular play where the running back got hung up short of the first down, he's able to blow his three technique, 330-pound guy into the ground, get up, see that the running back's hung up, he runs downfield and pushes the running back over for the first down. I mean, that's effort, and that's what he can do with his body and physical gifts that he has. It was fun to see.
And the main benefactors of, you know, this good offensive line player, very much the running backs. And I think for years we've said, you know, Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith, you know, they haven't played behind great offensive lines per se. They played against really stacked boxes. But, you know, this game epitomizes just the skill that they have. You know, Rodney Smith goes for 18 carries, 139 yards and a touchdown, 7.7 yard average. Shannon Brooks, 13 carries, 99 yards, 7.6 yard average. Mo Ibrahim, 15 carries, 84 yards, 5.6 yard average, 3 touchdowns. Like, those guys, they were the main benefactors. And I know that they would give all the credit in the world to the offensive line, but in the same respect, these are really some special backs, Ryan.
They are. They certainly are. Rodney Smith is playing at arguably what I think is the best or the highest level that I've seen him play. And I think that's speaking volumes about just at the level he's playing at. You've seen Rodney in earlier seasons have some really, really good games. Well, you just look at the way he's playing right now. And this is the offense that Rodney Smith deserved for 3.5 years. Now he's finally getting it in his final year. But in Big Ten play here, Luke, Rodney Smith has 65 touches. So between carries and catches, can you guess what he's averaging yards per? That'd be yards per touch.
5.5.
7.6.
Not even close.
Rodney Smith is nearly averaging 8 yards per touch on 65 touches against Big Ten teams. Now, before everybody gets all huffy about it, yes, I understand it's not the Iowas and the Wisconsins of the world. These are still Big Ten teams that you're competing against. This isn't the Little Sisters of the Poor. And Rodney Smith, I think, just the way that this, I think outside zone for him is his best running scheme for him to run into. He's a very patient back. He's not afraid to cut across the field, and you saw that on Saturday night. But what I think he's doing at such an elite level right now is finishing runs, running through contact. I can tell you, when you look at the 318 rushing yards that the Gopher running backs had, I bet you over 50% of that came after contact. Now, it was contact that wasn't necessarily great contact from Nebraska in terms of Nebraska guys were out of position and good running backs just run through that like Smith, Brooks, and Ibrahim do. But Rodney is just playing at such an elite level right now. He's continuing to keep his legs churning, and he's getting help from guys around him that if teams are going to dedicate a safety to making sure that Bateman and Johnson don't beat them, Rodney Smith is going to make them pay. Or even Shannon going 13 carries for 99 yards. He had some gigantic holes to run through as well. I really wish that he'd start to figure out that dead leg once he gets into the open field and maybe just run. If you're going to dead leg it every time you get into the open field, the safety's not going to bite, so you're going to have to eventually just run straight. But I think Brooks is playing at a really high level. Then Mo Ibrahim gets his first touch in 36 days. It'd been 36 days from Georgia Southern until Mo Ibrahim got his first carry against Nebraska, and he gets 3 touchdowns on the day. And I'm sure Rodney or Shannon would have liked one of those, but just the way that these running backs are running through contact, the way that they're using their vision to set up blocks, to making sure that the blocks are there, the holes are there, and they're seeing it, and they're running through contact to make sure that the offense continues to stay on track. Eric, what did you think about Minnesota's running back performance on Saturday?
Well, I guess if there's any regret, it's interesting. I don't want to throw cold water on a conversation, but they ran outside zone so well that I try and think back in these guys' career, and they both battled through injuries. They've both been with the team for a while, and think about what might have been had the Gophers had the personnel and the scheme and the right fit to be running more outside zone earlier. And I'm talking years prior, so not just this year. Just so what I mean by that is they run it so well, as you touched on, Ryan, with both of them, really, Rodney and Shannon, their ability to stay patient and then accelerate and burst after they read the blocking is it looks like they're, you know, it's a natural fit for them. And in years past, that hasn't been a big part of the offense, for various reasons. And that would be the only regret coming out of this is, boy, wish we saw more of this, you know, in years prior, you know, as well as they did, what might we have seen there? But it's every year is unique. We touched on it. The reason that we're seeing more of this now is because of the way teams have to scheme to, if they choose to take away some things in the passing game, and it's going to open up the run. So that put more stress on, to be fair, put more stress on the Nebraska linebackers, and they didn't have a very good day, frankly. So, things are balancing up scheme wise, and the running backs are certainly taking advantage of it. It was very in the first half, extremely good outside zone. Second half, when Nebraska changed things up, those were hard yards they had to get in the second half. You know, a lot of inside zone in the second half because of Nebraska's changes. More put your head down, try and grind out first downs. And so might not have had the stats that they did in the first half, but certainly they had to give as much or more effort in the second half to grind it out.
Okay, so real quick, let's touch on the passing game. Tanner Morgan, 8 for 13, 128 yards, 9.8 yard average. Tyler Johnson led the crew with 5 catches, 109 yards, 21.8 yard average. Real quick, Derek, in your assessment, did you think that Nebraska came in and said, they are not going to beat us through the air and basically prove it on the ground? I mean, at least from the first half, that's what it looked like to me.
Yeah, I thought that the scheme that Nebraska used in the first half was essentially taking away the intermediate passing. So what they were saying is if Minnesota's going to throw the ball, they were either going to have to run shallow crosses, rub routes, something underneath, or some more difficult downfield passing, things like corner routes, goad routes, fades, and things like that. So they were scheming to take away, those intermediate slants and RPOs and things like that. Now, in the second half, where I'll give the passing game some credit is, you can get lulled to sleep as a wide receiver, being in on so many runs and having to, run guys off of run defense. But Nebraska shifted in the second half. They brought another safety into the box. They widened their outside linebackers and defensive ends to try and take away outside zone. Minnesota came back with running inside zone. And then when they needed or wanted to, they took some shots in the passing game. And it was nice to see that Minnesota picked right up where they needed to. First play of the second half, Nebraska comes out. They're in a different coverage. Minnesota comes right out with an RPO, hits a slant for an explosive game. And, if there's anything I could say about the passing game, and frankly, if they wanted to in the second half, they could have had a lot more single coverage shots if they wanted. But being that, the score was what it was and the game script was where it was, they chose to stick with, controlling the clock and staying with inside zone and, grinding it out.
I also want to talk a little bit about Kirk Ciarrocca. And now you're starting to see, folks, why Minnesota's offensive coordinator was offered the job at Auburn as the OC 2 years ago, why West Virginia wanted him so bad last year. This offense isn't overly complex, but my God, is it efficient and effective. You look at Gopher Football just tweeted out this stat. And Luke and Derek, when was the last time the Gophers scored 28 or more points in their first six games of a season?
I mean, it can't be that long ago, because I don't know if they were scoring that many points, early in like the 40s and stuff. I'll go with 1960. Yeah, 1960.
Derek?
I would say somewhere in the 90s, early 90s.
According to the Gopher Football Twitter account, the last time outside of this season when Minnesota scored 28 or more points in their first six games, 1905.
That wasn't even close.
114 years. And so things are changing. And why are they changing? Because the offensive coordinator now has skilled position players and a quarterback and an offensive line that are performing at a high level. And I think what stood out to me most about Kirk Ciarrocca was two things. Number one, the fact that he wasn't afraid to game plan for outside zone when you were starting getting a brand new center started there. That was John Michael Schmidt's first career start, and he's going against 330-pound Big Ten defensive tackles, and you're getting Blaze Andrews, his first career start at right tackle. He's not afraid to game plan for it. He and Brian Callahan get the players executing at a high level in the Minnesota Moving Company. And I also loved in that second half how he took shots. He wasn't afraid to try to put his foot on the jugular and make sure that Nebraska knew that they were done. Start the second half, you have go play action, everybody bites. Tyler Johnson's wide open on a double slant. And the throw isn't great for Morgan, but Tyler does it after the catch. Then I believe it was the next drive. First play, first and 10. Jake Paulson has that terrible drop. There's no one within a country mile of Jake Paulson there. Why was that so effective? And it's funny because, Derek, I'll give you credit where credit's due. Derek was texting me in the first half, and he's like, that tight end is going to be wide open on play action. You watch. Well, Derek's smart. Kirk Ciarrocca is smart. Minnesota goes play action. Paulson just runs past the linebackers because they're so concerned about stopping the run. The pass was there. Paulson just dropped it, but that would have been a touchdown. Then you have the next series. First play, what does Minnesota do? They go post wheel route. So you had Rashad Bateman at the bottom of your screen. He runs a post. It takes the outside corner and that play side safety to the middle of the field. Tyler Johnson is in the slot there. Kind of fakes like he's just going to run to the flat, and then he gets vertical quickly. Morgan delivers the throw. Tyler gets it down to the one. Ibrahim kicks it in the next play. You have an aggressive offensive coordinator that's not afraid to take shots vertically down the field. and you have a guy that's executing, and I think has his players executing at a high level, yes, but I think the game plans essentially, especially in Big Ten play here, have been sensational. We're talking about an offense that in their last 12 games is scoring 34 points a game. It's no coincidence they're on an 8-game winning streak. It's no coincidence they're 6-0. If you're going to be scoring 34 to 38 points in a game, especially in Big Ten conference play, you're going to win a lot of games. It doesn't take an elite football mind to tell you that. But I just think the way that each individual position group on the Minnesota offense right now and how they're executing at a high level. We talked about the running backs. We talked about the wide receivers, the tight ends. I mean, Tyler Johnson had the quietest 100-yard receiving game I've seen in years, going 5 for 109. But the wide receivers know that if teams are going to take us away, okay, Rodney and Shannon and Mo are going to feast. If they start to dedicate guys to the run, Tanner is not afraid to throw it to me in the passing game. You saw Chris Ottman-Bell get a score on everybody's favorite tunnel screen. But even Tanner Morgan, now he only attempts 13 passes on the day, but I think what's noteworthy is what he's done, especially in his first three Big Ten games here. Minnesota scoring over 30 points a game, yeah, but Tanner is completing 73% of his passes with an 8-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. If you are going to go for football fan to you're going to really start to pay attention to this team a little bit more, this is a fun team to really watch because you get to see points. You get to see great skill position players, and you get to see an offensive line that's executing at a high level, Luke.
All right, I think just to close things out, I think that the offense obviously followed the script. PJ said as much in his press conference, you know, as the game ended. They definitely could have probably put up more points. Again, I think, Derek, you alluded to this when we chatted earlier, that, you know, they would have had to execute. But, you know, that said, they went very conservative in that second half, you know, and probably rightfully so. They had a large margin already. No sense to basically pour salt on the wound unless you really wanted to get repayment for 1983 and 84-13. But I don't think that PJ is necessarily on that vibe. So I don't know. I think we should probably talk a little bit of defense here. But first, Ryan, we probably should get another word in for our sponsor, the Goal Line Club. I just want to go back to that tailgate. You and I had a great time. We hung out with a number of Gopher fans, chatted with them. The food was great, etc. I think that these Goal Line Club tailgates could get a lot bigger, and people better get on joining because it was quite the event on Saturday.
It was. It was a lot of fun to get in there, be amongst the Rubes. We talked to some guys from Gopher Illustrated. I met a number of people that listened to this podcast that were at the event at the tailgate there. I think my favorite one was I had a guy stop me and say, you know, are you Ryan Burns? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I love your podcast. I go, great. He goes, but I really like listening to Luke more than I like listening to you. I'm thinking to myself, Well, don't sugarcoat it next time. So apparently you have a lot more fans out there in the audience than I do, Luke. But it, in the words of the millennials, it just be like that sometimes. So, and I also want to bring some attention to that luncheon.
Exactly.
And that's where Jim Panagos was the speaker. And you get a catered meal or a catered lunch from Jack's Cafe in Northeast there. The food was good, but being able to have a position coach come in and break down all 22 film with you and 40, 50 other people, and you can ask him questions. And I learned so much about what he's trying to do on that defensive line, and I'll get into that here when we switch to defense. But just being able to learn and watch tape with a position coach that obviously knows what's going on and what they're trying to accomplish, and that was worth the price of admission alone. So the next tailgate is going to be from Maryland, of which, by the way, all of you listening probably know what upper Midwest weather looks like in late October, probably a little bit something like Saturday. So if you want no takedown, no setup of your tailgate, strong drinks, it's inside, it's warm. So if you have a significant other you want to have come with, but she or he doesn't want to be out in the cold, I don't blame you. Come inside, get free, or not free, unlimited beverages, you get catered food. I think it'd be a good option for you. So if you want to check out more, go to goalineclub.org.
And remember to use SHELD5 to save $5 if you're not already a Goal Line Club member. Okay, let's talk a little bit of defense here. Again, this defense, they've been playing lights out in the Big Ten. You know, only 7 points given up against Nebraska. Nebraska's no slouch. I know that they're missing a couple of guys. J.D. Spielman was a little maybe nicked up. They lost Wandale Robinson fairly early in the game, obviously without Adrian Martinez. But, you know, at the end of the day, they still had some talent. I know Spielman still played, etc. But this defense is playing probably as good. Yeah, probably as good as they've played basically in the Joe Rossi era. I guess I was impressed primarily with their run defense, in particular holding Maurice Washington to 6 carries and 20 yards. He absolutely torched the Gophers, if you remember last year. So as Ryan has been talking about the revenge tour, Ryan, that was maybe just the start of the revenge tour, holding Washington in check this game.
The entire rushing attack for Nebraska was essentially held in check. And yeah, I'm well aware Adrian Martinez didn't play. And I would give the counter argument that I don't know that there's really a big drop off between the way that Adrian Martinez has been playing in 2019 compared to what Noah Vedro could bring. That may be a hot take, but Adrian Martinez is a dynamic athlete. I'm not disputing that. But he has certainly not been playing well of late.
Vedro's probably faster too.
Yeah, and I mean, we noted that in the preview podcast, but you go from last year in Lincoln, where Rob Smith's defense and this Gopher defense allows 3 different 100-yard rushers last year. Well, at TCF Bank Stadium on Saturday night, they limited Nebraska's 3 starting running backs, 72 yards on 21 carries. It's under 3.5 yards per carry. And that's one of the things that I was – arguably my biggest question to Joe Rossi last week was, you look at what, you know, I asked him, I said, on tape, it looks like the 2 things you're trying to do are limit big plays and stop the run. I mean, I asked him, is that accurate? And he said, absolutely, because if you're able to stop the big plays, because big plays lead to points, that's what they do. And if you're able to stop them on the ground, especially, you're able to get them into unadvantageous situations. I can get different personnel on the field and we can create havoc. Well, you look at last year, Nebraska had 10 different plays over 15 yards against Minnesota. 10 different ones. I mean, they were chunking Minnesota left and right. On Saturday, Nebraska had 2 chunk plays, and 0 of those were on the ground. That's an improvement. And that's what you've seen from Joe Rossi's defense. And to be honest, it starts up front, and it starts with that defensive line where we haven't talked about this guy enough, the way he's been playing in Big Ten play, but Derek, the way that Sam Renner played on Saturday from that 3-technique position, it was sensational. Just generating pressure right and left. He was getting into the backfield and running plays. The entire defensive line, to me, had their best game of the season so far. But is that a hot take? And what did you think?
Well, I thought it was probably his best game of his career as a Gopher. He flashed a lot on Saturday. Whether it was, you know, in the run and the pass. I just thought the defensive line, with being led by him, but everybody in general, it was probably their most physical game of the year. And what that resulted in was a lot of consistent backfield penetration. I think that if I had to judge, you know, going in, what they wanted to get out of that front 7 group was to try and disrupt Nebraska's backfield action. They're a spread team that likes to run 3 and 4 wide receiver sets, and they like a lot of backfield action where they're running outside zone or they're faking zone and running a QB counter or a QB draw, mixing in jet sweep if necessary, things like that. And if you sit back against an offense like that and try to read and react, that's what it plays into their hands. So I thought it was a very good job in the run game of the defensive line, getting penetration, disrupting things. You saw a lot of those carries from Washington and the rest of the backfield. They were making their first cut 3-4 yards in the backfield, which again, doesn't let them get up to speed. It doesn't let them, generate blocking, you know, to unfold, and, you know, you're disrupting things from the start. And I just thought the front seven interior wise was exceptional. And in going back to the linebackers as well, I thought Thomas Arbor had a probably his best game of the year. And Kamal Martin continues to play, you know, exceptional. And, you know, just that front seven on defense was very good. And just to round it out, you know, from a scheme perspective, I was actually a little bit surprised. Nebraska has a lot of weapons, and I was surprised at the amount of man coverage on the outside that Minnesota continues to play. We saw in the Illinois game, I wasn't terribly surprised because Illinois throwing the ball, that's not their forte. They want to run the ball. So, you know, Minnesota felt like they could get away with it. But I think as each game continues through the season, they're putting more and more faith and responsibility in those guys on the outside. And what that does is it allows those guys in the middle of the field to focus on stopping the run. And then in passing game, they're able to zone everything off in the middle of the field and take away a lot of those passes over the middle, you know, crossing routes. Nebraska wants to run rub routes and things like that. Totally took that away because they're able to zone things off in the middle of the field. So as you touched on, Ryan, good scheme coming into the game, you know, good execution, obviously, but starting with that defensive line, it was certainly their most physical game of the year, I felt.
And it was felt like, and that was one of the big reasons why they won the game, was they were just more physical in Nebraska on both sides of the ball. And even to come out in that second half, you're only up two touchdowns. And we just saw that Michigan nearly blew a four touchdown lead against Illinois earlier that day. Two touchdowns doesn't really mean a lot. But the way that Minnesota set the tone in that third quarter with physicality in the cold, Nebraska just didn't want to be there, and Minnesota was. And that starts with physicality up front. And that's where, back to that defensive line, I just want to make sure we don't shortchange them. And especially that three technique position, because to hear Jim Panagos break down all 22 of just different plays from Minnesota's first five games or so, a three technique position in that defense is oh so valuable. Because in Minnesota's defensive scheme, what they're trying to do is that nose guard, in the words of Panagos, if things are working well, that guy's getting double teamed all the time. And if he's getting double teamed, that means you're going to have one-on-ones with Coughlin, Renner, and Delaney Boudaire. And that's where Sam Renner has just elevated his play in recent weeks. And you saw that culminate on Saturday night. Whether it was an inside move, whether it was a spin, whether it was a bull rush where he knocked the left guard straight onto his keister, getting into the Nebraska quarterback, and then Dew Treadway, who eats the double team, he knows that's my job. He gets his eyes in the backfield and he deflects it. It's not just one guy. And even Carter Coughlin, you saw Carter Coughlin get a couple sacks on Saturday. Well, why did that happen? I mean, I put it in the GIF rewinds and the upon film review. It was the three technique that the interior pressure forced the quarterback to slide up where Carter was waiting and he pounced on it. Whether it's Shad or whether it's Renner, those two guys are playing at a very high level right now. Jim Panagos said at that Friday luncheon that Keontae Shad is the most improved defensive lineman from August until today. Now, the nice thing is Minnesota's gotten another year with him. And you can also see why it almost matters that he won a recruiting battle. Keontae Shad was a junior college defensive tackle that beat out Oklahoma and Mississippi State for, among others. And that matters. It's almost like recruiting and stars matter. It's almost like good teams want good players. And Keontae Shad is learning at a very high level right now. And that's where this entire defensive line unit is. It's not a me thing. It's a we thing. And I know that sounds disgusting to hear, and you think, what another cliche. But they're doing things schematically to set up different guys. And even if the light continues to click for a guy like Boye Mafe, he does things once or twice a game, and I think Derek would agree that you're like, there's not another guy on this roster that can do that, whether it's an athletic play, whether it's a strength thing, whether it's some kind of a speed move. I mean, Boye Mafe is going to be a very good player by the time he leaves here. But this defensive line, whether it was setting the edge, whether it was generating pressure against Nebraska's offensive line, I thought they played very well. But I also think, like Derek said, that Kamal Martin continues to do things that it's almost like he was on the Senior Bowl watch list for a reason, too. He's played in four games now. In his first game, he gets double-digit tackles. And in his three Big Ten games since, he forces four turnovers combined against Illinois and Purdue. And then he leads Minnesota in tackles here on Saturday. And that's the interesting part about it, Derek, where Kamal Martin is just, he is excelling at playing between the hashes, where maybe earlier in his career, he was a guy that Minnesota wanted to use in space. Well, I think Kamal is starting to show that he's not afraid to trust his instincts between the tackles, and he's been really disruptive in the box.
Yeah, he's a guy that with the way the game is going offensively for a lot of teams, running more of the RPO, the spread, becoming making off defenses defend you horizontally, that's really played into an athlete like Kamal's hands, because there aren't as many teams left in the Big Ten that are running the Iowa and the Wisconsin 2 and 3 tight ends run right at you. That's a little bit different, you know, technique and type of linebacker that's made for that, defending that type of system. Now, where you have in the 14 teams in the Big Ten, you've got, oh, I would guess 9 or 10 of them are running some version of, you know, highly spread sideline to sideline, whether it's passing or running, and it requires somebody to be able to cover a lot of ground and now between the hashes for Kamal, be able to make plays. And so, and you know, we touched on this last week, but I'll repeat it one more time. I feel that he's now at a point in his career where he's seen so much, so many different offenses, so many different, he's gotten comfortable with reading plays that now he's able to play at full speed. He's able to diagnose quickly, realize what's coming, pick things up, and just, you know, and he can go flat out. And you see when he's able to do that, being set up very well by the defensive line, that's how a guy like that end up with 14 or 15 tackles. The defensive line's doing his job, and he's able to fly around and make tackles.
I also want to make sure we touch on the interior. That's when I mean the interior, the safety position and Chris Williamson in the slot. It seemed to me that this was a game that meant a lot to a guy like Antoine Winfield. It looked on the surface from the press box that this guy was maybe playing with a little bit of extra juice. The world's oldest sophomore has seen some things in his Minnesota tenure. I mean, he starts under Jerry Kill, and then it's Tracy Clays, and then it's PJ Fleck. He has been through a lot, and he knows that this kind of game, a 5-0 game at home against a Nebraska team that still or was considered to be arguably the front runner in the Big Ten West prior to this season. If you want to make a statement, it's got to start with someone like Winfield. And he played, I thought, with a lot of juice. And I thought that he tackled well in the box. We continue to not talk about Jordan Howden, which, considering the amount of time that we gave to Howden last year, that continues to be a good thing. And I thought Williamson had an up-and-down day. He still missed some tackles at times. But essentially playing in what the Big Ten, especially in the Big Ten, when you're going to be a base nickel team, your nickel better be physical, because he's essentially an extra linebacker in the box who's only 6'2", 210. And the way that those guys played and made sure that Nebraska couldn't get outside, or they were the ones that had to make that tackle, or it could have been a chunk play, for the most part, I think they made those plays on Saturday, Derek.
Yeah, it's just touch real quickly. I mean, Chris Williamson continues to, I think, develop more in the run defense. You're right. You having to be physical, take on things like outside zone that we talked about the Gophers run. Many teams run that. I think he's an underrated coverage guy. I think when they ask him to cover one-on-one, he's done that and then some. So I think he continues to develop, and it is going to be a key, that nickel position. Just schematically, real quick, one of the things they showed on defense that they showed in the Purdue game, they kind of brought back for this game with J.D. Spielman, is being able to change coverages and run a zone but keep man coverage on their best guy. So they also showed that in this game a few times with Spielman, and obviously that is going to be key when you have a guy who's head and shoulders beyond, you know, other competition that you see, being able to blanket a guy like Rondell Moore or J.D. Spielman, just another good wrinkle that they can throw in, and something I expect to probably see more as the season goes on, something to keep an eye on. And just, I wanted to make one comment on your, talking about Antoine Winfield and playing with a little extra juice. You know, he's a guy that has seen more, and I don't want to get up on too big of a soapbox, but, you know, there's definitely another side of, and it's fair to say, you know, well, the Gophers are 6-0, but take a look at, you know, who have they played? How difficult are these teams? Are the better teams are at the end of the year? There's probably some truth to that, but I think it's fair to say that, frankly, the Gophers haven't always won these games they're supposed to win. They haven't always played well. And so Antoine Winfield, to tie it back, he's probably the guy that's seen that. So the Gophers can only play who's on their schedule, and you name your cliche. I know the coaches are all saying it, but Antoine's probably a guy who's seen, who knows the importance of this because he knows what's coming. The competition is going to get better, and you've got to take care of business. You got to play well now or it doesn't matter. So you got to give him credit. He did have some extra juice. He's a guy that's seen it. And, you know, again, the whole team, I think, is they're taking everything seriously, and because they're able to play well, and they're doing some things now that they haven't done in the past against these type of teams.
And that's a great point where there's been, and again, social media is such a cesspool, and it's tough to actually get an accurate gauge of what the casual, quote unquote, casual Gopher fan thinks. And I think where I'm at is, we'll get into this a little bit more for the final thoughts here, Luke, but no one's clamoring for Minnesota to be taking on Alabama right now. No, there's just no one in their rational state of mind doing that. But you also have to acknowledge that Minnesota has taken that next step. What was the next step? As Derek said, win the games you're supposed to win. Win the games on your schedule. Minnesota started on their schedule against teams like Purdue, Illinois, Nebraska. It's not their fault that it ends up being that they're playing against backup quarterbacks and their top skilled position player just goes down. It just happens to be that way. For many years, it wasn't that way. And if, you know, you're getting all flustered about it and you're thinking, well, they still haven't played anybody, they're playing the teams in their schedule. Fleck had nothing to do with the non-conference. He wasn't here for any of that. He's just playing the teams on the schedule. So I also think my last thing on defense is, I wonder how much the new blood on defense has affected this defensive room. What I mean by that is Jim Panagos has been around football and college football for 30-something years. He's a former defensive coordinator himself. And then you also have the two guys in the secondary that were added. Joe Harris-Simiak was a very successful FCS coach that called the defense for Maine. The University of freaking Maine made it to the FCS semifinals. Why? Because their defense was really good and Harris-Simiak called it. Rod Chance comes from Oregon, but before that, he was at Southern Utah. Why was Southern Utah winning the conference championship when he was the defensive coordinator there? It's because their defense was really freaking good, and it propelled them to a historic season at Southern Utah. So you look at that defensive room now. The D-line coach has been a DC before. He's been around football a long time. Rossi's the linebacker coach plus the DC, and then you have your two guys in the secondary that also have been defensive coordinators before. I wonder how much impact that all those guys kind of coming together to come up with a defensive game plan has really helped Rossi's defense really take that next step, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point. And like, we got to give credit where credit's due. This defense in Big Ten play has been playing really well. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that they're only giving up 13.5 points a game in Big Ten play. I am not counting 17 for Illinois, where those came on, let's see, wasn't a fumble recovery.
And then we had the Fleck timeout debacle.
Yeah, well, so basically, you know, they only gave up, they're only giving up 13 points a game, and that's impressive. I don't care how good or how bad you think those teams are. The fact you're only giving up 13 some points a game in major Power 5 football, that's pretty impressive. Now we hope that this will stick, but I am basically been shown wrong. I didn't have all the faith in the world in Rossi. So I will definitely I will definitely admit I was wrong, and I hope that this continues going forward. But Ryan, before we get to kind of looking at what we have left in this season, now that we are six games in, this is the halfway point, right? There's 12 games. Yeah. So basically now that we're halfway in, why don't we get in a word from our sponsor, one more time.
Yeah, our newest advertiser is the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, Mr. Bill Burns, and he is predicting a Gopher win this weekend. Now, that's not really going to be moving the earth, considering Minnesota's a 29-point road favorite, but if Minnesota were to be undefeated, 7-0, it'd be the first time in 59 years, since 1960. Now, just like the Gopher offense is averaging 475 yards of offense right now, the Burns Insurance Agency routinely saves their clients that amount on home and auto insurance, and his many business insurance accounts are averaging nearly three times that amount. We're talking $1,500 to $2,000 of savings, plus you have increased coverages. Now, being a local independent insurance agent in local downtown Oakdale, Minnesota, means that he can get you the best deal regardless of insurance company. So they offer great savings, great coverages, and above all, great insurance. So if you want to learn more about the Burns Insurance Agency, go to insurancebyburns.com.
All right. So when we're looking at this, the remainder of this schedule, I think the Gophers obviously will be favored in at least two, if not three, of these games. So you're going to be favored in, you know, at least 50% of them going forward. But, you know, I think right now, let's just talk about the kind of the respect that they've earned so far. I know that people look at the rankings in terms of being ranked 20th in the coaches poll or 20th in the AP. I think that's what I read just earlier. I don't know.
They're 20th in both.
Okay. So they're also getting respect in some of the analytics as well. In the S&P Plus, they're currently 17th,
which is Bill Conley's model,
right?
Formerly of SB Nation, now at ESPN.
Right, and that's pretty impressive. Their offense is ranked number 9th in his model. The defense is what here, 38th. Not terrible. The special teams is a meager 65th, but we digress from there.
The fact that we didn't really even have to get into special teams.
Well, we got to give Herbert. We got to give Herbert some credit. That wasn't a great snap that he got down, and they made that extra point. I thought that was pretty impressive. Not a great snap by Weeks, but you know,
I mean, Herbert is with some crazy wind. Had five punts for a 34 average, but three of them were inside the 20.
Yeah.
So I've just accepted at this point. Jacob Herbert is going to be death taxes in like a 40 net average. Now, he wasn't a 40 net average on Saturday night, but Nebraska special teams didn't exactly have the greatest of nights either.
All right. So, but let's look going forward here. I know, Derek, you constantly talk about, you know, you want to be playing your best ball in November, right? And currently the Gophers seem to be on that trajectory. But talk to us about what it's looking at the second half of this season for the Gophers.
Well, I think that it's no surprise that they're schedule is loaded heavy in the back part of the schedule, and so we've talked in years past about the importance of crescendoing into the November. And what I mean by that is, I mean, if you look across Power Five football or even outside the Big Ten, generally the teams that are playing well in November are the teams that end up finishing near the top of their division, end up doing better in the postseason and things like that. And so Gophers have played well thus far to this point. It's been injuries have been, which is a, you know, very important part of playing in November, is injuries. And that's been very good for them so far. Really maybe the best of any of the past few years that we've been covering, you know, the team is they've just had to deal with less of those. But I think what's going to happen, what would be interesting to see is that, you know, when you step up into some of these, particularly some of the better defenses they'll have to take on, is finding out how they're going to react against that level of competition. It's exposing these guys to different game scenarios. You know, early in the year, they played some games as heavy favorite. They didn't play real well, but they learned how to, you know, win a game, how to come back, you know, had some fourth quarter comebacks. And so that was good experience for them. What I thought was interesting, just to go back to the Nebraska game for one second, it was really the first game they've had a really comfortable lead. And so there was a time period of time in the second half where things got a little bit fuzzy and maybe they lost focus a little bit. And to me, that was saying, you know, they weren't 100%. It was the first time they had been in that scenario. And so what you're going to see going into November now is how do they handle being an underdog? How do they handle some of these, more talent, better defenses in particular, some offenses that are very good, and how do they react to that? You know, you sometimes do have a little bit of a shock in that first game that you take on, you take a step up and take on more competition, but it's really about how you respond to that. You know, you take on, let's just say Penn State or whoever it ends up being that is a step ahead. It's a little bit of an adjustment. And so, you know, sometimes those outside zones that were going for 12 yards are now going for 6 yards, or, you know, plays that were going for 6 or 7 now are, you know, 3 or 4. So it becomes more difficult, and that's the adjustment. And it's really how you respond to that. And so what I've learned so far, and what it just as a fan, and what I've picked up on that's been different from, you know, that my experience as a player is, I think that Fleck and his staff has done a better job preparing for the end of the season than previously, than I was experienced to. What I mean by that is I think they kept things very vanilla early in the year. That's kind of a new concept to me. That really wasn't a thing back when I played. And so I kind of had, you know, questioning that and wondering, well, what's going on here? But I think we've seen, you know, as things get added and complexity gets added, and you save some of those things, maybe that helps contribute towards, you know, being able to play better at the end of the year. So if we're judging based on last year, it couldn't have ended any better. I mean, they had a good run. And so this year is a little bit more unique again, because the things are stacked at the end of the year, and I'm excited to see how they respond.
It's going to be interesting, especially if Minnesota can win their next two games, as Luke mentioned, and I first somehow haven't mentioned it. The revenge tour continues, not this weekend, but against Maryland, hopefully, if you're a Gopher football fan. So if Minnesota is able to finish out October 4-0, they're going to have a 10-game winning streak. That 10-game winning streak would be, I believe I looked this up. Now let me look at my notes. So the 10-game winning streak would be the first time Minnesota's had that since 1942. And if you're still just finding reasons to not like P.J. Fleck because of his personality and everything, I think you just got to reevaluate things. And just buy into a Gopher football team that is looking to be a serious team for November. And that's all, Luke, we talked about it in August. That's all you can really ask for, because you're still going to be playing against three teams ranked in the top 25 right now. When you get Penn State at home, then you got to travel to Iowa. You still have to go to Evanston and play against a Northwestern team that is very stout defensively. And then you end with Wisconsin, who is just buzzsawing anybody in their way. Now, I don't think that Michigan is the team that I thought they were going to be coming into the year. Michigan State certainly hasn't showed well through their first half of the season here as well. But I think we're going to learn a lot more about Wisconsin when they take on Ohio State. Now, it's easy to say that because Wisconsin has to travel to Ohio State and everything. But if Minnesota still wants to be taken seriously, you can't lose these next two games. Rutgers has been outscored in their first three Big Ten games by 128 points. They've been outscored 135-7. If you're wondering how in the world is Minnesota nearly a 30-point road favorite, Rutgers is bad. Like, they're bad, bad. And then you have Maryland, who just lost by, I believe, 26 to Purdue. And this is a Maryland team that is in year one under a different coach. And if you want to be taken seriously, and if you want to continue that revenge tour, Maryland has had P.J. Fleck's number the last 2 years. So I still think that there is a very realistic chance that Minnesota's 8-0 going into their final bye week to prep for Penn State at home. And I'm going to knock on wood here, and we're going to talk about it hopefully after that Maryland game, because it could be a very special game against Penn State if that were going to be the case. But just the way that the offense and the defense are clicking right now, especially in their last few games since Big Ten play has started, it's so hard to not be optimistic about what this season could be. Even if you go 2-2 in November, so say you beat Iowa and you beat Northwestern. I mean, can you imagine, Luke? You'd be 10-1.
That's, yeah.
he'd be 10-1 going into the Wisconsin game, where Wisconsin, in all reality, is probably going to be 10-1.
Yeah.
So you have the battle for the axe at TCF Bank Stadium for a trip to Indianapolis. What more can you ask for? I don't know that you can ask for much more. No, we may be getting ahead of ourselves.
We absolutely are.
But it's so tough to not be optimistic about the way that just this team is executing at such a high level on offense and defense right now, that you have a 12-game sample size, which in college football is an entire season. And since Tanner Morgan took over, Minnesota's averaging 34 points a game. It's no surprise that they're 10-2 in those games. If you told me the offense is going to continue to, not even 34 points, if you told me the offense is going to score between 28 and 30 points for the rest of the season, or they score between 28 and 30 in November, you're going to be in a lot of ball games. Now, you're going to be facing some much more talented fronts when you play the Penn States and the Iowas and the Wisconsin, certainly. But you need to continue to build momentum that when you do get into November and adversity hits and you have a loss or you have a tough game, you can bounce back. And that's where I still think this has the chance to be a special season for this Gopher football team.
Yeah, and, you know, we really want to thank everybody that, you know, is joining the bandwagon here now. No shade to you. It's fun to have you joining
on.
Yeah, welcome aboard. It's been a fun ride thus far. To give you some notes, most of our podcasts, they're probably not worth going back and listening to because they're very game specific. But if you want to, by all means, go for it. Absolutely. But we do want to thank everybody for listening. It's fun, and we'll continue doing this going forward. Again, want to thank our sponsors, the Goal Line Club and Burns Insurance. Thanks again, everyone, for listening, and go Gophers.